What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant. Socially distancing and masking when and where necessary. And welcome again to another edition of Fantasy Camp as we go all throughout the NFL divisions, going division by division. This is division number four. So at this point, we will be halfway through. We will be finished with the AFC. Next week, we will start getting on to the NFC divisions, which means we are getting closer, in theory, to the start of the NFL season. In theory, getting closer to the start of training camp as well. I say in theory because we have no idea how any of this stuff works. I have a couple of guests that you may or may not know, depending how deep you are in these fantasy streets. I will introduce them in just a moment. But before I do that, normally I would talk to my faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy, Esquire. But Murph's on vacation this week. Still living things up in NYC. Hopefully he is good and safe there and look forward to him getting back. But in the meantime, I want to give a shout out to Arjuna, who stepped in to help out. I know you usually are sort of a special projects guy. I know you've living that, you were living that move the sticks life, you know, going big time with Bucky and DJ. So I appreciate you sitting in and helping me out today.
Of course. Happy to, you know, happy to be here. Happy to help.
Yeah, no doubt. Want to get to my guests now. Couple of guys that I have known basically through social media, and now it's a chance for me to meet them in person. For those of you who can't see, I'm doing air quotes for in person. First, a guy that is a contributor over at 4for4, is a staff writer at The Athletic, also working for Fantasy Data as well. Eric Moody. Moody, appreciate you jumping in, man. How are things in Dallas?
Man, things are going going pretty good, you know, given the circumstances. I know we're talking just briefly before we started recording, so I've been able to, you know, lose some weight, get some more exercise out there. But I'll say the biggest, you know, kind of takeaway, you know, from all this, you know, just trying to, I guess, make lemons out of lemonade, so to speak, is the additional family time. You know, being able to work from home with the family has been huge. So it's going as best as it can, my friend. Thanks for the invite.
No, I appreciate it. And I feel like what you said is kind of the general sentiment I've gotten from a lot of people that I've talked to. I mean, this is kind of our life now. So my other guest, another guy that I originally knew from social media. And I feel like you and I sort of started communicating. I don't even know if you were writing fantasy at the time when we first started communicating, and we would just kind of, you know, you'd ask questions. I'd kind of bounce back with answers as much as I could. And now I've kind of watched your career sort of grow. You're writing at 4for4. You're doing stuff at Number Fire, DL Football, Draft Consult as well. It is Chris Allen, also co-host of the Dynasty Manual Pod. So, Chris, it's nice to finally connect with you over something more than, you know, 280 characters, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. And I mean, I think the first time that we actually started going back and forth, I think it might have been over some beers that I had sent to Matt Harmon. And yeah, I sent those out to his way back when. And things have just kind of snowballed from there. But I'll echo Eric's statements and saying thanks for bringing me on. And I know we just missed each other last year at the Fantasy Expo. Mm-hmm. And hopefully when things get back to some sense of normal, we might be able to connect next time you're out in Ohio.
Yeah, no doubt. I got to ask, though, before we get too deep into this, are you brewing anything new and exciting?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's one of the, again, I have to echo Eric's sentiments in making lemons out of lemonade, because being at home so often, I actually have like an electric brewing setup here. Wow. And I can actually brew like in my house.
Nice.
And so between that and being at home, like there've been, I guess my bosses hopefully aren't going to be listening to this podcast, but during some meetings, I've had, you know, the kettle running, and I've been checking things and, you know, doing a little bit of multitasking. So I've been trying to keep up with as much as I can.
I'd like to say what happens here stays here, but I want people to listen to the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. I'll send it directly to him and let him know.
Sounds good. before we dive into talking about the AFC West, I have to ask if either of you are about to load up on Washington Football Team merchandise. Now that is their name for the year. They are the Washington Football Team. I mean, Moody, you're down in Dallas where, like, you know, home of their eternal rivals, the Cowboys. There's a pretty good chuckle going on that they're going to just be the Washington Football Team for a year.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to purchase any merchandise. I tell you, it's tough enough being in Dallas and being a diehard Saints fan. So you can just imagine the type of grief that I get from friends in the area and coworkers. Let me tell you.
Oh, man, it's going to be interesting. I will say this. I'm not a fan of the club, but I'm tempted to buy at least a T-shirt because it may be a collector's item at some point.
Yeah, just for the memorabilia, right?
You know,
good point.
Whenever they come up with whatever their next permanent name is going to be, you know, to say that you had a T-shirt that just says Washington football team or a hat, right, or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, side note, I remember buying – I grew up in the Bay Area, and I remember there was a point when the San Francisco Giants looked like – I mean, they were signed, sealed, and delivered to move to, like, Tampa, St. Pete. I mean, the trucks were packed. It looked like they were gone. And I was never a Giants fan as a kid. But I remember getting some gear thinking like, hey, it's going to be a collector's item. And I like had some like shorts and a T-shirt or something like that. And then those jerks ended up staying in San Francisco. So like, yeah, I had gear. I had gear from a team I didn't like that wasn't even like worth anything. So that's just me venting. Anyway, over to the AFC West. Always have some big questions for each of the teams. We'll do some kind of superlative, some best and worst potentially from the division, and then some either or questions at the end to kind of have some fun with. But we'll start with the big questions for the Denver Broncos. And Moody, I'll start with you. Okay. How are you approaching this Broncos backfield now that Melvin Gordon is there, Phillip Lindsay? I mean, Royce Freeman is still a sentient human being. I mean, how are you looking at this backfield right now?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I will tell you, my preference is to target Lindsay, and I'll give you reasons why. So you look at ADP, you know, according to like 4 for 4, Lindsay's the RB 40, Melvin Gordon's the RB 16. Now the perception is that Gordon's going to dominate the opportunities in the backfield because the Broncos are paying him $9 million. You know, that's definitely not backup money, we'll just say. Right. So, you know, Gordon's average, you know, 91 total yards and nearly 17 PPR points per game in 67 active games since 2015. Now, Lindsay, on the other hand, he's no slouch. Like, he's averaged 80.2 total yards and nearly 14 PPR points per game over the last two seasons. Now, you've got a new element that's added in this year, of course, with Pat Shurmur. You know, joins the Broncos as a new OC. You know, he's publicly stated, you know, that he plans on using both backs. And so, you know, the addition of Gordon obviously negatively impacts Royce Freeman more than Lindsay. Mm-hmm. I think we're looking at a committee. And in those scenarios, my preference is to go with the least expensive option. Now, another thing with the Broncos, you look at their offensive line. I'm like, they were solid up front last season. I'm like, if you look at Football Outsiders adjusted line yards metrics, you know, they finished 11th. Now, given the offseason adjustments, you know, they're well positioned to repeat this feat. Now, Denver, and something else that's not really spoken about, but as an ex-offensive lineman, you know, this is like my thing. But, you know, Denver has one of the top like offensive line coaches in the NFL in Munchak. And, you know, that's a committee you really want a piece of in fantasy. You know, the Broncos ran the football, you know, 43% of their offensive plays last season. You know, I looked at my projections doing one prepping, you know, for the show today. And, you know, my projections have Gordon finishing around like 220 touches and Lindsay with around 195. So it's one of those scenarios where they can have a similar finish, you know, at the end of the year. And again, I just want to go with the cheaper option.
Yeah. I mean, my fear, Chris, is that, you know, like I'm with Moody in the fact that, look, Melvin Gordon's going to be the starter. I think that there's no doubt about that. My fear is that we'll get midway through the season and suddenly it turns into a hot hand backfield where you may start one guy. You know, you may start Gordon, for instance. Lindsay ends up having a better game and your guy's sitting on the sideline. I guess that is my biggest fear when I look at this Broncos backfield. Am I weird for that?
No, I don't think you're weird for that at all. And I think that's something that, especially, you know, given the times that we live in, that, I mean, you're going to see a lot of committees being formed either through just the virtual nature of the backfields or just the way that the pandemic is going to wind up affecting many of the teams that we're talking about right now. So I think that's a fair way to approach the backfield. And then also, I mean, given the fact that, I mean, this is, I mean, Gordon switching teams and also, I mean, Lindsay, I mean, to his credit, I mean, what, back-to-back, like 1,000-yard seasons coming out as a UDFA. I mean, there's a lot of talent that you can't just summarily displace. And I know that a lot of folks want to use his contract information as a reason to just go ahead and let's summarily say that Melvin Gordon is going to be that guy that's going to wind up with 60% of the touches. But how do you get rid of the 50-plus percent rate that Phillip Lindsay had? I mean, what he was able to do on the ground, both as a rusher and as a receiver out of the backfield. it's hard. I'm hard pressed to believe that that's just a situation where it's just, well, we just gave this guy a bunch of money. Philip, you just go sit on the bench. I mean, again, I'm just it's hard for me to see that just happening straight out of the gate. And I can much rather see a much more even split with, as Eric was pointing out, that the one that gets hurt the most is Royce Freeman.
Right. Yeah. No, I feel like Royce Freeman has sort of, to quote the Mike Tyson, sort of faded into Bolivian. I don't see any real opportunity, at least not enough, to make him worth even taking a late dart throw at. Chris, after Courtland Sutton, which pass catchers, are there any that you're really targeting that you trust? I mean, maybe Noah Fant, but are you big on, say, a Jerry Jeudy, a KJ Hamler, any of those guys beyond Courtland Sutton?
Not really. I mean, and I think it's not necessarily a function of the receivers. I mean, Jerry Jeudy, very high. He was one of my favorite wide receiver prospects coming out in this year's class. And I'm very excited about what Noah Fant can do, seeing one of the long touchdowns that he had. I believe that was back in week 7 or something like that, mm-hmm. of last season, that 75-yard touchdown up the seam. I mean, very athletic. And that's what we want in those mid-round tight ends. But I think when you look at the Denver passing offense as a whole, I mean, they were sitting at just below average in terms of neutral pass rate. And it's, to me, the way that they're building their team doesn't really seem like it's one conducive to literally any of the other teams that are within their division. I mean, Oakland has now moved on, has tried to at least come into the 21st century in terms of they want to add more pass catchers. They're already running up against the Super Bowl contenders in Kansas City. And the Chargers, I mean, to their credit, they don't have Phillip Rivers anymore, but they still have a number of pass catchers as well. But all of those other teams had a much higher passing rate for the way that they wanted to approach their offense. Denver does not. I mean, they're still one of those teams that I look at as being one of those that would rather, let's grind out the clock. Let's see what we can do on the ground. If we need to pass, we can. And otherwise, we'll just let our defense do most of the heavy lifting, and we'll go and we'll try and work it that way. And again, playing in that division, I don't know how often they're going to really be able to actually execute that philosophy. But looking at how that they operated last season within the last 4 or 5 games where Drew Lock was starting, that seemed to be the case. Unless they were pulled into a negative game script, playing when they took that first L against Kansas City, or when they were playing against Houston. I mean, that seemed to be more of what would actually spark that that passing offense. Otherwise, I think that the volume is going to be low enough that outside of the guys that you mentioned, I mean, Melvin Gordon, Phillip Lindsay, certainly. Noah Fant, I'll take a dart throw on him. Courtland Sutton, absolutely. I'll take a look at him as well. But outside of that, I mean, you're throwing darts without really any, I guess, hope that they wind up beating their ADP.
Yeah. So Chris mentioned the potential passing volume there and game strips and that sort of thing. Moody, obviously the Broncos have gone all in on Drew Lock as their quarterback of the future, at least for now. Yeah. I mean, for our purposes though, is he ready for primetime in 2020? Or are we still talking about maybe another year or two away?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I believe so. Lock, he has Shermer as his OC. I'm who's a proven, kind of play caller. He has a pedigree to position his players to be successful. One thing, we're looking at his coaching tree. I'm he's part of Andy Reid's coaching tree. So Schumer's offense is a blend, the West Coast, and spread offenses. So Lock, at Missouri, he thrived in that type of scheme. For fantasy purposes, he is more of a QB2, but in certain matchups, he is going to have QB1 upside. I know a lot of people may think that the Broncos aren't going to throw as much. I know they've got Gordon, they obviously have Lindsay, but yeah, I think many will be surprised once the dust settles on the 2020 season with the number of pass attempts that Drew Lock has.
I think. I always feel like when I talk about quarterbacks, and we look at these guys, especially the younger guys and their potential upside. I feel like for fantasy, they're all sort of hampered by the fact that the position is incredibly deep, you look at Daniel Jones is a guy, for instance. I know we're not talking NFC East, but Daniel Jones is a guy who is supposed to be a sleeper, a breakout, however you want to categorize him this year. But he's still a guy who's going way off the board, late off the board, because you can easily find 10 or 12 quarterbacks that you would rather have ahead of Daniel Jones. And I think Drew Lock, fits kind of in that category as well.
Yeah. Can I make a comment on Jeudy real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. I would say with like with the you know, the question about the pass catchers in Denver. You know, I'm pretty high on Jerry Jeudy. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a good route runner. I'm like, you know, he has the strength to impose his will, like on nickel, you know, cornerbacks. I'm like, he dominated the slot in college. And, you know, the expectation is that he fills that role for Schumer, you know, who has a history of leaning heavily on 11 personnel. And so I had even more conviction with that, like at the draft, you know, months ago, whenever they picked up Hamler. So I'm like, okay, great. You can have Hamler that can be on the outside. You're going to move Jeudy, you know, inside. Mm-hmm. And again, if you look at 4-for-4's, you know, strength of schedule metric, you know, schedule adjusted fantasy points allowed, I'm like, the Broncos do have a difficult schedule. But I think what's going to cause headaches for defensive coordinators is that I'm like, you've got this plethora of receiving weapons and you have to pick your poison. Who are you going to contain? You know, Sutton, Jeudy, you know, Hamler. And so someone is going to get theirs. And I really do believe it'll be Jeudy. I think he'll end up finishing the season for the Broncos second in targets and get more targets than Noah Fant.
That sort of begs the question, how much are you guys kind of leaning into this idea that young players, rookies especially, are going to be hurt by having an unconventional offseason? I mean, I feel like that's the consensus, although I've seen some pushback on that. I'm just curious about how you guys sort of feel about that.
I mean, at least for me, it's easier for me to tell myself a story as to how the running backs have an easier time integrating into their respective offenses, just given the nature of the position. Now, for certain wide receivers in their situations, like we were just talking about Jerry Jeudy, like we were like, even if we wanted to, we'll probably wind up talking about Henry Ruggs here, like here shortly. Any other the rookie wide receivers that walk into situations where our expectation is that They might not necessarily be starters, but they should be a constant rotation within their respective offenses. I see a path to those guys. But other guys, let's say, that might be slightly buried on the depth chart just due to the nature of the wide receiver room that they're in. So let's say a guy like T. Higgins, let's say a guy like maybe Michael Pittman, but we'll see, like with the injury situations with the other wide receivers there in Indianapolis, those guys might take a little bit longer for them to get on the field again, just because of the nature of who they're competing against for targets. I mean, Pittman's dealing with, he's got Paris Campbell, he's got T.Y. Hilton. I mean, there are still other receivers there. The same thing with T. Higgins in Cincinnati. I mean, if you still believe in John Ross, I do, because I have a soft spot for Cincinnati, but then all the way up to A.J. Green and so on and so forth. I mean, those are guys that are going to have a tougher time like making their way onto the field just because they have a deeper rotation. But for guys like Jerry Jeudy, guys like CeeDee Lamb, guys like Jalen Reagor, I think it's easier for me at least to tell myself a story as to how they get on the field, just because due to the, I mean, the fact that there should be a larger part of their offense versus anybody else.
I feel like I've learned a lot about you in the last few days, Chris, that you're a John Ross stan, you're a Corey Davis stan.
Please, somebody send help.
I feel like I've learned a lot about you in the last few days now. All right, let's shift gears to Kansas City. And I'll throw this out to both of you. You guys can, you know, Moody, if you want to start, and Chris, you can jump in. What's the earliest you've been willing to draft Patrick Mahomes? And let's just say, you know, just a standard, you know, one QB, not two QB leagues, just a one QB league, whatever. What's the earliest you have been at least thinking about taking a swing at Mahomes?
Yeah, well, I would say if he was sitting there like in the fifth round, you know, I'd take a, you know, I'll go and scoop him up. And we're just so conditioned to take a quarterback like in the later rounds. I would say I'm more concerned with finding like a cheaper quarterback option who has like a similar range of outcomes in 2020 to like a Mahomes. Cause I always think about like, you know, opportunity costs. You know, I draft Mahomes at ADP or third, fourth, fifth round, whatever it may be. I'm always more concerned about what I'm giving up by taking him. But I would say another quarterback that hasn't really gotten a lot of, you know, publicity is Matthew Stafford. That's a guy that I'm particularly high on.
Yes.
You know, I think if you look at like your, you know, different projections and things, I'm like, I could see a similar range of outcomes for Mahomes and also for Stafford that's eerily similar. I'm like, you know, he has, you know, like top 10, you know, QB upside. I would say even, you know, top five even. But I'm like, he's the 13th QB coming off the board according to a 4-for-4 is a ADP. I mean, you think to last season, you know, again, it's like everyone thinks about, you know, what's he done for me lately? And they think about the train wreck that Detroit was. That's a whole another conversation. But, you know, Stafford, you know, Stafford averaged like 312 passing yards per game in 8 games last season. But I'm like, he's criminally underrated. So that's a guy that I would prefer to target instead of Mahomes, to at least answer your question, Marcus.
I believe he was QB6 before he went down, or QB6 in points per game before he went down. So to your point, I think that's the right way to look at it.
Yeah. I mean, Chris, are you feeling the same fifth round or so for Mahomes?
I think if you're gonna approach it by just the way that the market rolls and like with his third round ADP, if you're gonna do it, I mean, you have to at least understand, like Eric pointed out, the opportunity cost associated with it. And if I was going to go ahead and swing for the fences with Mahomes in the third round, I mean, at that point, you might as well just go ahead and do just like the absolute monster stack of grabbing like Kelsey in the first round, go Tyreek in the second, and then go ahead and grab Mahomes in the third, grab Damien in the fifth, if you feel so inclined, and then just ride it out. I mean, because at that point, you're trying to go for like the most unique high upside roster, because the third round drafting Patrick Mahomes, that means you've passed up on DJ Moore, Odell Beckham, any of the third round like running backs, if you so choose to try and give it that, Melvin Gordon. I mean, any of those guys, Chris Carson, anybody, any of those mainstays at the core positions. So if you're going to do it, you might as well at least try and, you know, what's the football term? If you're going to screw up big, right, you might as well do it that way. Yeah, exactly. And try and just get as much of the upside as you possibly contain in a single roster.
I mean, you talk about a big swing. That is a Tiger Woods off the top monster swing. You know, like that. This is also where I make my obligatory pitch for us as a community reconsidering quarterback scoring. And I know people who listen to this pod regularly are probably sick of hearing me say this, but I keep coming back to, like, if we all agree that Patrick Mahomes is awesome and that he is arguably the best player at the most important position on the field, we have to make it so that it's not considered a competitive disadvantage to draft him.
That's right.
I don't have any further, like, you know, answers for you than that. I just, you know, I'm just,
I like the 6-4, what was it, 6-4 touchdowns, then 6-4, minus 4 is good.
Yeah, 6-4. I've also said, you know, I feel like escalators when it comes to both multiple touchdown passes and multiple interceptions too. Because
that's fair.
Yeah. There's no real way that Jameis Winston should have been a top five quarterback after
interceptions.
Like that just shouldn't have happened.
I mean, how many other top five quarterbacks wound up losing their job the year after?
How many top five quarterbacks had, you know, six time champions come in?
That's true. I guess if Tom Brady wasn't on the market, that maybe that would have been their option.
Jameis is kind of a party of one, I think. So, Chris, you talked about taking big swings at the Chiefs offense, right? I mean, obviously, we know Tyreek is going to go early, Travis Kelce is going to go early. You look around the rest of that receiving core, right? I mean, there's hope for maybe Mecole Hardman. We're definitely going to get the Sammy Watkins, you know, the one Sammy Watkins game where he goes for like a $150 and like two or three touchdowns. Mm-hmm. But over the long haul, can this offense sustain a third pass catcher? Is there somebody worth taking that dart throw at late?
I don't know if – well, I would say that's the, I guess I'll partially answer the question saying, yes, the Kansas City offense can support a third pass catcher, but that pass catcher doesn't have a name, or it's an amalgamation of Damian Williams, DeMarcus Robinson, Sammy Watkins, Mecole Hardman. Pick your poison. So I think that the easiest answer is probably to run it back with Sammy Watkins, even though I feel bad for saying that, just because of his current contract situation, the fact that they brought him back, and how he was used within the offense last season, like when he shined, like especially towards the back end of the season into the playoffs. I mean, that was the guy that Mahomes was looking for, more so than Mecole Hardman. I mean, and not to discredit Mecole or any of his advantages, but to me, it just seems like he'll wind up being more of a rotational player than anything else. And as much as I would like him to be a thing, I mean, his target share, I mean, he started games and didn't even get any targets. So how do we see that jumping into a 10 to 15% target share, which would put him in like the wide receiver two, wide receiver three, that sort of range? I just can't see it. I see that team as more of, like, let's pack as many pass catchers as we can into that offense. So very similar to what Denver is trying to do in 2020 is pick your poison. You've either got Cortland Sutton or Jerry Jeudy. Now here at Kansas City, pick your poison. You now have got Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Damian Williams come out of the backfield, Clyde Edwards-Helaire out of the backfield as well, and try and defend us that way. It's hard to pin down who that third receiver is going to be because they have so many of them.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I mean, I don't know. Is there somebody that did you
are my looking preference? At what? Yeah, my preference is Sammy.
Okay. Eric, I mean, is that what you're looking at, or is there somebody else, or are you just kind of punting on that third guy right now?
No, I agree with a lot of the comments that that Chris mentioned, and I guess I'll channel my Henry Cavill impersonation from The Witcher as he was going through that breakdown. I was like, you know, I was like, I was agreeing, but I would say if you are going to go with one guy, Mecole Hardman, is a guy for me. I'm like, if you look at, I know he didn't get a lot of volume, didn't get a lot of targets, but I just think back, I'm like, he averages like 21 yards, nearly 21 yards, like per reception. And that is just really attractive when you think he's catching passes from Patrick Mahomes. But I'm like, he may top out at what, 80 targets, 85 targets, for this year. So he's going to have some big games, but it's just going to be difficult to sustain the third pass catcher. So, I agree with Chris. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's fair. I think we sort of get caught up, right? We see Mahomes and we see the big numbers and we see the passing volume and we just think that like, man, there's got to be. But, sometimes the answer is none of the above, I think, in a lot of cases. You guys mentioned Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and the moment he got drafted by the Chiefs, I think we all had our collective fantasy party about what it could possibly be. And I mean, he literally is like, he's like the hottest toy at Christmas, right? Like everybody is trying to rush to get him, which makes me ask the question, Moody, are we disrespecting Damian Williams? I mean, this guy was, he very well could have been the Super Bowl MVP. He played very well in the postseason, played that well down the stretch. And now he's sort of getting tossed aside. Are we just disrespecting him right now?
It's just the nature of the beast. I always think about the running back position. I know, we have a lot of witty people we know on Twitter, that talk about running backs all the time. But I just always think about the Metallica song from, their classic Master of Puppets, Disposable Heroes. That's essentially what running backs are. So I don't think he's getting disrespected. I'm like, he's entering the final year of his contract. I'm like, the Chiefs have to plan for the future. I'm like, Williams will still be involved. I'm like, the guy average, 18.6 touches, 110 total yards per game, like over his last seven games, including the postseason. We know he went gangbusters in the Super Bowl. I'm like, but when you have your franchise quarterback who just won your franchise a Super Bowl, it just says, Clyde, go get him. And then the front office goes to get the guy. I'm like, that speaks volumes. And so Andy Reid, I'm like, he hasn't used a first round pick on a running back since selecting Shady McCoy back in 2009. I think that turned out okay. So it's just kind of a sign of the times. And Damian Williams just happens to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And plus, if he did stay healthy and was more consistent in that regard, then that may have gone down differently. But who knows? But it just is what it is right now.
Yeah. I'm gonna start a GoFundMe for veteran running backs.
Right.
Yeah, definitely not a position to position to play. So I was obviously way too big to play to play running back. Back when I was playing ball, I was about 6'4", about 315. So definitely not the running back type. But I'm like, if my son's a basketball kid, but I'm like, if he was playing football, it's just like I probably wouldn't have him play running back.
Make him a long snapper.
There you go.
An option. Yeah. Yeah. That's an option right there. Yeah.
There's some job security in that.
I have to do that. Very true.
Over to Las Vegas. And I had to make sure I said Las Vegas and like didn't just go with Oakland out of a reflex. But
yeah,
over Las Vegas, Chris, what is potentially the ceiling for Josh Jacobs this year?
I mean, I would say whatever we think about for Nick Chubb, I think that's about his ceiling. And the reason I use Nick Chubb as a placeholder is just based off of what he has in terms of competition in the backfield, what he has in terms of competition as a receiver, and just the way that the whole offense is structured. I mean, Oakland, I mean, for as excited as we are regarding that offense with the addition of Henry Ruggs, Bowden, Bryan Edwards. I mean, there's a lot of excitement around the passing offense, but still, I mean, this was a more or less like underwhelming like passing offense. I mean, at the hands of Derek Carr. I mean, they were below the league average in terms of neutral passing rate, also below league average in terms of deep ball rate. I mean, so there's in terms of like passing volume, and that's really what we look for in terms of the running backs that are going in those first couple of rounds. I'm just not seeing it in terms of what you would want out of like what you would want even from from like a floor perspective. But at the high end, let's assume that they get pulled into some of those game scripts. I mean, they do have to play against Kansas City twice, LA a couple of times. And actually, I believe within their first few games, I think they play against like San Francisco and like a few other games. So it's possible that, I mean, Jacobs winds up being that guy that they turn to a bit more often, just given the nature of the game environment itself. And so at best, I can see him kind of pushing into that RB1 conversation. But if they just continue to ho-hum like up and down the field like they have, like with Derek Carr, it's hard for me to see him really pushing into what we would want for Joe Mixon, what we would want for mm-hmm. Austin Eckler, Kenyon Drake, and most of the other guys. I mean, he'll probably be, I guess, RB12 at best mm-hmm. is kind of where I see him falling, but it's hard for me to push him up really into the, I guess, certainty for RB1 ranks.
I mean, this is kind of a rhetorical question, but why don't they throw him the football?
He trained with Julio Jones in terms of being a route runner, like before the combine. I mean, coming out, I'd be like, how, like, what more do you need?
Yeah.
I mean, if Julio says that you got it, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what other sort of endorsement you need.
I'll take his word for it, right?
Like, I will too.
I don't. I just it boggles the mind. I don't understand it. All right. So then, Moody, what is the ceiling for Henry Ruggs in this offense?
Yeah, I have Ruggs projected, you know, for around 95 targets and 800 receiving yards with 6 touchdowns. I think his ceiling is more of like a wide receiver 3. Like mm-hmm. I even have like Darren Waller still leading the team in targets. You got to look at history too. I'm like, you know, since 2000, I'm like, there's only been 3 21-year-old receivers, you know, who have had like notable seasons. You know, you think back, you know, Keenan Allen in 2013, Mike Evans in 2014, and Amari Cooper in 2015. I'm like, to kind of reach those heights that those receivers did, I'm like, they average out like 119 targets, like amongst right. like all 3 of them. I just don't see Ruggs, you know, getting the volume. But I know where Chris, we're kind of breaking down like Jacobs, where I know he mentioned about Derek Carr. I think one thing that a lot of people are forgetting about, like with the Raiders going into last season, I know we've had a lot of news flow with this individual since then. But remember, Antonio Brown was supposed to be their number one receiver. So
I think he did. It was like a lifetime ago, man.
Yeah. Tell me about it. So, you know, you got Ruggs coming in to fill that role. And I think he can end up being the you know, the Raiders version of Tyreek Hill. You know, that's kind of how I see him. I just don't think the volume's going to be there for him to kind of ascend to the heights of like an Allen, Evans or Cooper is what I'm trying to say.
Right. Yeah. All right. I mean, so then that put out there, then I just keep this train rolling then, Chris. What is the ceiling for Darren Waller this year? Can he do or duplicate what he did last year?
I think so. And I think that where he's priced right now in terms of being that tight end 5, like tight end 6, I think is fair. Now, I know there was a lot of consternation like within the fantasy community, like once Hunter Renfrow became a larger part of the offense, he was the one that was taking a lot of those targets away from Darren Waller, making at least from like qualitatively or just getting the feel like around the Twitterverse, like around those last like weeks 13 through 17 or towards the back end of the season, it was, I mean, where are those touchdowns that we want from Darren Waller? If it's not Hunter Renfrow, it's Foster Moreau, the ones that are taking those targets or those touchdowns. But in the first 6 weeks of the season, Darren Waller had a 26% target share within that offense. I mean, those are like wide receiver 1 like type target shares. But even once Hunter Renfrow came back, I mean, through weeks 13 through 17, he dropped down to 22%. So instead of Odell Beckham, you're getting DJ Moore level like target shares. I mean, that's still like fairly, I mean, that's really impressive like for a tight end. So do I think that's still a part of how they want to operate in 2020? Absolutely. I mean, it's not like they brought in another tight end in order to replace Darren Waller. And even with the fact that they added these other pass catchers, there's only so many people that you can have on the field at one time. So even if they want to have like a number of like 3 wide receiver sets, okay, fine. Like Eric had just pointed out, I mean, Henry Ruggs can only take up so much. we only expect so much out of Tyrell Williams. Hunter Renfrow will still get his. And Josh Jacobs, I mean, he can only catch like so many passes as what little as we expect. And the same thing for Lynn Bowden, Jalen Richard. I mean, there's only so much that can go around on the field at any one time. I still think that Darren Waller, week in and week out, can give you at least a stable floor. With that upside, I think that he should have some of that TD, like positive regression, that can wind up actually keeping him at that tight end five area, like with, I guess, some room to actually move into, you know, tight end four, like depending on how the season goes.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's my fear, is that, you know, I feel like they need the touchdown numbers to come up, just because I'm not sure that the catch numbers, the target numbers are going to be the same this year. All right, round out the division by coming here just down the street pretty much from where I am. The L.A. Chargers, who they made the announcement that the new SoFi Stadium is going to have limited or no fans. So you can insert the joke about the Chargers not having any fans anyway. Whatever.
It's right there. It's so easy.
I know. I felt like I had to just get that one out of the way. You know, if it were a fish, I would have thrown it back. Anyway, Moody, why? Why is it Tyrod Taylor getting more love? Like, I feel like we've seen the splits and, like, you know, the comparisons, the side by sides to him and Josh Allen, and the numbers were generally pretty similar between the two of them. But Tyrod's not, I mean, he's not getting drafted in a lot of places. Is it just fear of Justin Herbert? Why Tyrod's not getting more love right now?
Yeah, I think it's a couple of different reasons. For one, you know, a lot of, I'll say a lot of casual kind of fantasy players are always kind of looking back through the rearview mirror instead of looking ahead. And so they think back, man, you know, the last time that Tyrod, you know, got, you know, meaningful snaps and was the Bills starter, I'm like, oh, that dude only averaged 201 passing yards per game. You know, right. You look back from 2015 to 2017, they're like, I don't want anything to do with that. But you have to think about, too, like, the context is important. What were the Bills asking Tyrod to do then? I'm like, they were feeding, you know, LeSean McCoy. You know, he averaged a high number, you know, of touches per game. Mm-hmm. And they were just kind of asking Tyrod to kind of control the offense. Then you take into account, like, his you know, his rushing ability, too. And so it may be a little bit, like you mentioned, Marcus, about fear of Justin Herbert, you know, coming in, you know, sooner rather than later. But, you know, I think Tyrod's like a really good value, especially if you're in two quarterback leagues or super flex, you know, as a QB3, you know, who's relatively cheap. Mm-hmm. So he's a guy I have no problem picking up, you know, if he's available in there.
Chris, how worried are you about Keenan Allen? And I guess by extension, a lot of the other pass catchers, whether it's Hunter Henry or whom, you know, Mike Williams, whomever else, but specifically Keenan Allen, I mean, are you concerned about him this year?
No, not really. I mean, I can understand that, especially with the wide receiver position being so deep, and especially at his given ADP, there's some other like players in his range that might have some more upside. But Keenan Allen by himself, I mean, 24-25% target share the past few seasons. I mean, nothing about his situation has really changed, at least in terms of his competition for targets. I mean, we can assume that Hunter Henry now will be around for a few more games like this season. But other than that, I'm really not all too concerned about, like, Keenan Allen, like, by himself. Now, how he connects with Tyrod Taylor and how they need to, like, bring along their rapport a little bit more over this offseason, that I can see as legitimate, concern. Otherwise, I mean, I think that given his, like, opportunity within that offense, even if their market share or even if their total team volume starts to drop, because they did have, I believe it was either the second or third highest, like, neutral passing rate, like, in 2019, even if that drops, and let's say with Tyrod Taylor, because he is a hybrid quarterback, and that he starts to rush a little bit more, taking away from the total team's value, I think that still that Keenan should still have 20%+ target share within that offense, making him a value, especially where he lies, like, in terms of ADP. I mean, I get that he's, what, 27, 28? I mean, getting up there in terms of age, but still, I mean, the routes that he runs, I mean, he's still able to create separation. He still has one of the best hands in the league. So I would still be able to, if I can get him at value, I'll take him.
All right. We're going to do some either ors a little bit later, but I'm going to pose one to you guys, to both of you guys right now. Who you got behind Austin Eckler, Justin Jackson or Joshua Kelly? Which one would you guys rather have?
Yeah, I'll tackle it first, Chris. You know, no pun intended. You know, it's a football podcast. I would say I'm on Team Kelly. I'm like, you look back at his collegiate, you know, body of work, I'm like, you know, he's only the eighth running back in a UCLA history to have consecutive seasons with 1,000 or more rushing yards. What I like about him on film, you know, he's very physical, you know, downhill runner who's great in between the tackles, who I could see stealing, you know, he can end up stealing like goal line work from Austin Ekeler. And one thing about Ekeler, I know everyone, you know, loved the production last year, you know, he's great, et cetera, et cetera. But I would say, and he is, you know, I would say one thing though that was interesting is that if you look at like yards created per game, I'm like among running backs, he ranked, you know, 34th. Mm-hmm. And like his contract, which is great. Hey, I'm always happy to see a running back get paid, right? Mm-hmm. But his contract doesn't suggest like bell cow usage. It suggests more of a committee to me. And so that was even more confirmed with, you know, with their selection of, you know, Kelly, you know, in this year's draft. So I know Kelly's a running back I'm aggressively targeting in fantasy drafts, like as an upside, like RB4. If Ekeler mm-hmm. did miss extended time, I'm like, you're looking at someone that has RB1 upside that you got on the cheap. So, hey, Team Kelly.
You feel the same way, Chris?
Yeah, I would echo a lot of what Eric just said, and just the way that LA like ran their offense like within the first few weeks, especially with Melvin Gordon like still doing his holdout. Justin Jackson, he got like a 40% opportunity share just within the red zone. So like the way that the Chargers still wanted to operate was not with just giving Austin Ekeler like all the touches. I mean, but those money touches, the ones that especially for fantasy purposes, are the ones that we want. I mean, they were still fine trying to distribute some of those to the other backs. And Justin Jackson, I mean, to his credit, he was able to perform well, but I mean, that's what, the second season in a row that he's wound up with some injury concerns. So I can definitely see him like being the one that they turn to, I guess, at the beginning of the season. But with the Kelly's like collegiate body of work, I can see him taking over towards the middle and end of the season. And he's another guy that I'm also trying to target towards the end of drafts as well, just for that upside.
All right, cool. So that takes us through our big questions around the division. Now we're gonna do some what I'm calling the AFC West superlatives, generally some of the best or potentially worst of the divisions. We'll start with, when it comes to quarterback, I mean, I don't think there's going to be any argument that Patrick Mahomes is the top quarterback in the AFC West, arguably the top quarterback in all of fantasy. So, Chris, starting with you, and Eric, you can follow up. Who do you think will be the number two scoring fantasy quarterback coming out of this division?
To be honest, I could honestly see Tyrod coming out as the number two. I do have some reservations about like what Derek Carr is going to wind up doing, even with the addition of those pass catchers. And, I mean, that's neither here nor there, but I think given like Tyrod, I mean, he has a wonderful deep ball. His deep ball completion rate has actually been fairly impressive over the past couple of seasons when they actually have turned him loose. And mm-hmm. also we just talked about the fact that he does have access to that hashtag Konami code that will wind up winning you some of your weeks. So I still think that's a part of his game and what they can utilize. So if they can continue to at least, you know, keep him in those neutral or positive game scripts where he's able to actually like keep the game in front of him versus having them trail or whatever. And they definitely have the defense that will be conducive to that. I mean, assuming that, please, I'm hoping they all stay healthy, but they definitely have the personnel to actually, I guess, to allow him to operate the way that he's operated best. When he was with the Bills, that's the way that they operated. And he was able to actually put up a lot of great numbers like while he was there. So I think that in a perfect world, I think Tyrod would wind up being the second one to come out of that division.
All right. You can double down on that, Moody, or you got somebody else?
Yeah, I do have someone else. I would go with Derek Carr. I'm like, you know, he finished last season ranked seventh with the true passer rating of 106. I'm like, that's a quarterback rating that essentially factors out like unpressured throwaways and drop passes. And as I mentioned earlier, I was like, you know, he was supposed to go into last season with Antonio Brown like as his number mm-hmm. one guy. And so I think the biggest area, and Chris alluded to this earlier on a previous question, was that the biggest area where Ruggs can assist is with downfield passing. I know Carr didn't look great if you look at all the advanced metrics around downfield passing. So, you know, you look at him, and we talked about Waller. You know, he's got Tyrell Williams, too, that's better suited as like a number two and not a number one. So he's got Waller at tight end, you know, he's got Williams, and he's got Ruggs is his, should we call him a Tyreek Hill light? Or
sure.
Does that sound witty? Is that good?
Sure.
So I just think with Carr, I'm like, he's, you know, criminally underrated in drafts. And I'm like, he's dirt cheap. But I think it's in the realm of possibilities that, again, once the dust settles in 2020, that we look at like Derek Carr, like as like a low-end QB1, just given his body of work.
All right. So stay with you, Moody, then. Who is your top scoring running back out of the AFC West? Is it as simple as Austin Ekeler? Is there, you know, maybe somebody else?
Yeah, I would end up going with Austin Ekeler. you know, he'll be provided a high number of touches, you know, in 2020, especially with having Tyrod as the starter. And, you know, the guy was just very effective last season. I'm like, if you look at like fantasy points per opportunity, I'm like, he averaged like 1.29. I'm like, that was really the highest among running backs seeing like significant volume. And so I think he'll pick up where he left off last season, and he will finish as the top scoring running back in the AFC West.
All right. You got the same, Chris, or is there somebody else maybe?
I mean, I'm praying that it's Damian Williams. I mean, just let it happen, man. Just please let it happen. But otherwise, I'd have to echo what Eric was saying. That, I mean, given the, his opportunity to share within that offense, I mean, I know we were just talking about the fact that they're most likely going to wind up revolving everything around a committee base. But still, I do think that given where or how the Chargers want to operate, Eckler has the best path to doing that.
All right. Biggest AFC West sleeper, or if you got more than one sleepers, Chris, you can start.
I don't know if I mean sleeper. I don't know.
I know it's a relative term.
I know. Yeah. But I would say like the one guy that I do think a lot of folks are, I guess, overlooking is Mike Williams, like with the Chargers. I know that with the loss of Phillip Rivers, I mean, the amount of YOLO balls like probably won't be as many. And I can completely understand that. But again, I go back to this idea that, I mean, Tyrod Taylor, like by himself, like he is not a bad deep ball passer, as I mentioned earlier. So I still think that given his opportunity to share within that offense, I mean, Keenan Allen, the routes that he runs, his ADOT does not overlap with what Mike Williams does or can do within that offense. So I can still think that him ascending and actually being able a bit more healthier also this season will be more conducive to him being one of those guys that we look back on the 2020 season and just like, oh, okay, I get it, but I just didn't see it coming.
Got it. Eric, who you got?
Yeah, I'll go back to Mecole Hardman. You know, just with his limited opportunities last year, I'm like, with, you know, a guy that's averaging, you know, 21 yards per reception, it's tough for me to kind of turn away from that. You know, he's just an inexpensive piece, you know, one of the most explosive offenses in the NFL. And I'm like, you know, just kind of seeing him out there, you know, in drafts, I'm like, hey, I'll go ahead and scoop him up, you know, as my wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5. You know, God forbid if something does happen like to Tyreek Hill where he does miss significant time, I'm like, you've got a plug and play like wide receiver 1 again that you got on the cheap. So but I think he'll be more productive than people think, even giving the low target volume. It's I guess if you look back again, kind of always look from that 2000 to, you know, 2020 timeframe, it's rare for receivers to kind of have those monster seasons having limited target share is that I would say. But even if Hardman gets 80 to 90, I think he could surprise people. And it's mainly because he's tethered to, you know, Mahomes. Now, quick side note, Marcus. Now, what's funny is that whenever I found myself using like the word like tethered ever since I saw Jordan Peele's Us. It's like ingrained like in my vocabulary now. So I'm just saying. But Mecole Hardman for me.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So should we stop calling them like, you know, stacks and handcuffs? Or you just call them tethers?
Kind of the tethered?
Yeah. Man, that's wild. All right. So then, Moody, then who do you have as maybe one of your most overdrafted guys coming out of the AFC West?
Yeah, I just had a visit from my son Noah real quick. It just kind of popped in. But I'll go ahead and answer that question.
Yeah.
All right. So most overdrafted player. Right.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, gentlemen.
No worries.
So we're
all
at home.
We all understand.
Yeah. So I'd say for me, it's I would say it's Josh Jacobs. I know Chris hit on a lot of points earlier, you know, about Jacobs. So and it's kind of disappointing because I'm like, he's ridiculously talented. You know, he's athletically gifted. I'm like, he does deserve more passing work. But when they, you know, drafted Bowden, you know, and then they re-signed like Jalen Richard, there's just not going to be as many targets going around. Like, it's crazy that a guy like that got a little bit under 30 targets like last year, you know, given what he can do in space and as a receiver. But I just think John Gruden, you know, as the head coach, I'm like, it's unlikely to, you know, become a reality where he's going to get enough volume to kind of finish like as a top 5 guy. So just unfortunately, like he's being overdrafted. You look at his ADP. I just don't think he's going to be able to give everyone that return, like on investment that people are expecting.
Right. All right. Chris, who are you looking at?
At least for me, it's probably Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I mean, if you're looking at the back end of the second round, I mean, where you see him typically being drafted in a lot of leagues, it's hard for me to pass up a lot of the guys that that are typically going around him. I mean, we're talking top end wide receivers. We're looking at Chris Godwin, Mike Evans. If you want to swing for those fences and get like Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes around that area. I mean, there are a lot of those guys where one, we've already seen it done. I mean, again, that's looking at things in the rearview mirror, not really projecting into 2020, but at least for most of them, we have at least some sense of certainty regarding their 2020 outlook, either when it comes to volume, targets, or whatever. With Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I guess I'm stuck too much on what Damian Williams can do when he's healthy and where he's at, and his utility for the team that he's on right now. And for me to come in and summarily say that, I mean, CEH is going to wind up with a significant touch share, which you really need in order to pay off like a second round ADP. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to see that happening, even with him being tethered. Now I'm stuck saying this. Even with him being tethered to Patrick Mahomes, it's hard for me to see him paying off that draft cost. I mean, with the other guys that are already from the Kansas City Chiefs are already being drafted basically around him. I mean, Travis Kelce is picked a round ahead of him. Tyreek Hill is probably like 10 or so picks ahead of him as well. I mean, we're expecting all three of those guys, not to even mention Mecole Hardman, Sammy Watkins, and those other guys. We're expecting all of them to wind up paying off their draft cost. And if I had to pick one of those guys out of those three within the first 24 picks to not meet their draft ADP, it's Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
All right. Cool. So let's round this out with some either ors. These are all just quick hitters. I'll give you, two guys or two things. You pick one. You can use whatever criteria you like. So just pick one and just a couple quick words. You don't have to go in depth. I was going to go Derek Carr or Tyrod Taylor here, but I feel like you guys have sort of answered that over the course of our conversation. So I'm going to call an audible and switch it up. So here we go. And you guys both get in. Moody, you start this one. Damian Williams or Philip Lindsay?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Williams. Just with the offense, I just want an inexpensive piece of that offense if I don't get Kelce or Hill. So right. Williams.
Same, Chris, or different?
Yep, should have been the Super Bowl MVP. I'll just go ahead and throw that out there.
All right, agreed. Cool. Agreed. All right, Chris, you start this one. Henry Ruggs or Jerry Jeudy?
I would say Henry Ruggs. I do have a little bit more optimism around Derek Carr than I do Drew Lock. So I will lean Henry Ruggs.
All right. Eric?
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. I wouldn't end up going with Ruggs. I'm a born and raised in Alabama. Roll Tide. I've got a soft spot in my heart for Alabama receivers. So Ruggs, or as we call him, Discount Tyreek Hill.
There you go. All right, Eric, grape or strawberry?
Give me strawberry. Anything. It could be soda. It could be cake. You could be just the fruit itself. And I have this conversation with my my son Noah all the time because he loves grapes and he loves strawberries. And I was like, son, grapes are not as superior as strawberries. Strawberries are superior over grapes. So, just saying, strawberries.
Chris, grape or strawberry?
I mean, I guess just to go back to what we were talking about at the very beginning of the show, I've actually brewed with strawberries. So I guess I will have to also lean. I've actually put strawberries in the beer or extracted some of the juice and done it that way. And I must admit, having a strawberry flavored beer is actually pretty daggone good. So yeah, strawberries.
Right. I can buy that. It always bothers me this whole story about Tom Brady saying he's never eaten a strawberry. I'm like, the dude is 43 years old. And I say this to somebody, I know where he grew up in the Bay Area, the town he grew up in, literally an hour south of where he grew up is the city of Watsonville that has a world famous strawberry festival. And I'm like, you're telling me you grew up an hour from a town that has a strawberry festival and you've never had a strawberry? What kind of sociopath are you? I just don't understand.
To be honest, that's probably the least weird thing about him.
You know, you're probably right. You are probably right. All right. Last one here. Chris, if you could choose between the power of flight or the power of invisibility, where are you going?
flight easy. I mean, just the sheer convenience factor of the fact that I don't even have to get in my car. I mean, you can just tell me I can just go outside and then I'm just, oh, I want to go down and see the in-laws down in Georgia. Be there in a few minutes. Zoom, I'm gone. Or I need to go to the store. I need to go over to the mall and pick something up. Be right back. I mean, you know how much like, see, this is how you know I'm peak dad like right now because of all the gas money savings that I can now get like by having to being able to fly instead of drive my car everywhere. Get out of here. I'll take that all day.
All right. Moody, flight or invisibility?
You know, I probably put too much thought into this question. You know, I was thinking of like, if I say like invisibility, are they going to think, so what do you want to do? Just spy on people, Moody? Like, yeah. Hey, what's up with that? But I do agree with Chris, but like with flight, would be great, you know, just to be able to, you know, hey, fly back to Alabama or New Orleans, you know, where I lived or, you know, just anywhere in the, you know, the Dallas Fort Worth area. So it would be good. But then again, you know, since we're all, you know, fantasy football analysts here, you know, I got to thinking, right? You know, I got to thinking, I was like, you know what? So I'll be able to fly like, 1,000 miles per hour. What's going to happen? I don't have any other superpowers. I'm not Superman. What if I get hit by something whenever I'm flying out? You know, so, but anyway, you know, I'm taking it to another level. But to answer your question, Marcus, I'm just going to go with flight. So.
All right. It's funny because I've always said invisibility, but not because I want to like sneak around and do things. It's just more that like, you know, those times when you just don't want to be bothered, you can just be invisible. Yeah. You know, when like people are looking to ask you to do things that you don't want to do, you're just like invisible. And they're like, hey, you must not be here. And then like they go ask somebody else to do it.
There you go. Yeah.
So that was it. Hey, fellas, I appreciate you guys coming on. I've enjoyed the conversation. It's been a whole lot of fun. For people who don't know what you're doing or where you are, Chris, start. Where can people find your work right now?
Okay, where can they find my work? All right, so... I like to tell people that I'm collecting websites like Infinity Stones. I happen to have quite a few, but you can primarily find my work over at 444. But I'm also contributing over at Dynasty League Football, Football Guys, Number Fire, like once the season gets rolling. And of course, I've got my podcast with my buddy Adam Wilde, like doing the Dynasty Owners Manual podcast. So you can find me literally at any one of those websites. Plus, if you want to come yell at me for any of the takes that I've put on here on this podcast, you can find me at Chris Allen, FFWX.
Cool. Moody, where can folks find you?
Yeah, I would say the main websites where you can find me would be, of course, over at 4for4. You know, generated a ton of content there this offseason and more to come, you know, for the rest of July and August. And, of course, at the Athletic Fantasy, you know, I've got some pieces that'll end up getting published within the next week or so. And also over at Fantasy Data. And so, you know, if you want to chat, you know, I'm always open to a Twitter conversation. You can find me at Eric N. Moody. The N stands for Nicholas, my middle name. Unfortunately, at Eric Moody's already taken, but again, that's a whole nother conversation. So you could find my work there, but hey, I'm always open to chat about fantasy. So reach out, you know, you won't be disappointed. But thanks again, Marcus, for the invite. It's been a blast, my friend.
Yeah, no, I definitely appreciate you guys coming on. And then I'm going to give my own sort of shameless self-promotion here. Signups are open for the game at NFL Fantasy. You can go to fantasy.nfl.com, sign up, start your league, regenerate your league in case you had one there in the past. So jump on board and hey, let's get ready to play because it looks like training camp is going to happen. We're keeping our fingers crossed. And so that means we're getting closer to a season, which means we're getting closer to a fantasy football season. So there you go. That is it. We are done. We appreciate you listening and downloading and watching our video clips as well. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, stupid is when you spend 18 hours trying to drown a fish. Take care of yourselves, wear a mask, and we will see you next week.